jumped in the van and said, right, I'm coming home. That's it. And proceeded to set off on the 6-hour drive back down to Manchester. And then my wife rang me halfway back. She said, the results have just come out and you've finished 42nd like that. Oh, now I feel like a bit of an idiot. So it was a bit silly getting carried away, but I was so upset that I'd had such a good week and I thought I'd blown it. And that was the one thing, David, to be honest, that I wanted to get in my career more than anything else. I wanted to get that special first. It's something that I've thought about since I was a kid.
Hello and welcome to episode 78 of the Trials Australia podcast. I'm your host, David Grice. Just a reminder that if you're enjoying this podcast, to share it with your friends. Remember to subscribe through your favourite podcasting app and all episodes will be automatically delivered to your device. Just click the link to the episode on Trials Australia and you'll be linked through to all your favourite podcast applications. Also, we welcome you to join the Facebook group. Search Facebook for Trials Australia Podcast Community and come join the discussion. This episode is sponsored by GasGas. Right now, the MY21 TXT Racing 250 and 300 models are available from your GasGas Trials dealers. We are a global podcast, so please inquire through your local dealers. However, in Australia, they are The Hell Team, Revolution Trials, PTR Trials, Moto Dynamics, and Rockhopping SA. Locally here in Australia, there are some pretty amazing deals while stocks last. On the 2020 250s and 300s, there's a $2,500 factory rebate applicable, and the 2021 250 and 300s have a $1,500 rebate available. For those in the market for a higher-end product, the GP models also come with a $1,500 factory rebate while stocks last. This podcast is also sponsored by The Hell Team. One of the best things you can do to make your bike feel fresh is to look at the controls area. So we're talking here about your grips. Maybe they're due for a refresh. Or what about your bar ends? Maybe one's come loose. You can get all the latest grips from Hebo, Renthal and S3, as well as bar ends from S3 or Zeta at the Hell Team. Fast action throttles are typically a standard fitment on most trials bikes, and these turn 90 degrees. But an easier way to tone down a bike is to replace the fast action for a slow action throttle. These turn 120 degrees and offer a very cost-effective way to soften the power delivery on your bike. And if you really want to treat yourself, the Hell Team have the aluminium throttle tubes from Apico. These have a Teflon inner coating and a throttle bearing end for a really smooth action. And you can go one step further to trick it up with a throttle wheel bearing from Jitsi. All of this can be found on the Hell Team website. Please visit www.thehellteam.com. This week, we're chatting with Grant Morris. Grant should be well known to our Australian listeners as he is a multiple-time West Australian state champion and for a period also spent time riding extensively on the Australian East Coast. However, what makes this chat with Grant have slightly more global appeal is that Grant spent 10 years over in the UK, based around Bury and Rochdale, riding UK trials. This included 9 Scottish six-day attempts. In his last one in 2009, he gained a long sought-after first-class award. Grant also tells us about his time riding the Scott Trial, chasing the Road National Series, and even his trips to the French four-day. Grant has also gone on to a career in motorcycling, first whilst in the UK working for Apico, and then when he returned to Australia for the KTM Group. With KTM's recent acquisition of GasGas, Grant is now the unofficial Director of Trials here in Australia. I took this opportunity to ask him on his perspective of KTM's ambitions in the trials arena and did my best to get scoops on the plans that GasGas have for their trials bike. I hope you enjoy this chat with Grant Morris. Grant Morris, welcome to the Trials Australia podcast.
Thank you very much, David. It's a real honour to be asked to be involved. I've been listening to every episode along the way and I just think it's amazing what you've been doing with it. So thank you very much for having me on.
Well, we've actually had a number of requests to get you on, believe it or not. So it's a bit of mutual admiration society here because you've got a very interesting journey that takes you around the world with your trials from Perth to the UK and back again. And I think there's a lot of interesting stops along the way that we need to discuss.
Yeah, I guess I have really. Yeah, the 10 years I had in the UK were an incredible experience and definitely an itch that I needed to scratch sort of thing, so to speak. But it's the best time of my life in terms of the sport. And just something that just had been gnawing away at me for years before I went. And yeah, it was an incredible experience. So
yeah,
I've been very lucky to experience it, and it set me up where I am now, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereabouts were you based when you were in the UK?
Just north of Manchester in a place called Bury, which is actually my dad's hometown originally.
No way.
So
I kid you not.
My dad are English. And
we were about 35 minutes apart on the M60 ring road because I was on the other side down by Wilmslow.
Oh, you're in the posh bit.
Cheadle.
You're in the posh bit down there. Yeah, yeah.
But I had lots of friends that were up your way, and oh my God, we were that close. I can't believe it.
Good riding around the Cheshire area as well. It's really good around there too.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So take us through, because I really want to get into your UK time, but before we do, where did it all start? What's your trials origin story? How did you get into it?
So Dad was a mad trials rider. He emigrated with, met Mum on the boat on the way out. A cheesy story by itself. But they came out in the late 60s. Dad was a mad trials rider in England right up until the time he left, and then got involved in WA when the clubs over here started forming in the 70s, and was an integral part of when the clubs started up. The Pathfinders Club over here was involved in that pretty much from the very beginning. And then, I came along in the mid-70s, and we went to every weekend. It was an every trial every weekend pretty much, and just became part of my life, and I just loved it from the get-go, and was lucky that I was okay at it from the start. And just the more I got into it, the more I wanted to ride, and it's never stopped for 43 years.
Nice. So take me through club trials in Perth in your early days. What was it? You said trial every weekend, was it? Was it that popular?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know if the numbers were huge necessarily, but most weekends, sort of probably early 80s, probably 83, I think I started riding on a TY80, as so many people did. And there was a little crew of us, it was a really nice era, really. There was a bunch of us around the same sort of age, probably 8 or 9 years old, on TY80s flying everywhere, and they were the sort of staple bike for everyone. And there was a gang of a bunch of us, and the adults were fantastic. The parents put junior coachings on and things like that, and we just all progressed through there and kept the core group. Many of those guys now are still my age and still riding at various levels along the way, which is awesome. So
I suppose if you've got that core group as well and your parents are big into the sport, there was never a calling for any other type of discipline. It was always trials the whole way.
Not really. I had a bit of a minor flirtation with, we moved to Kalgoorlie in the goldfields back in 1987, and that's probably as far away from the sort of the hub of the trials in WA or in Perth anyway as it could have been, really. So
Kalgoorlie is far away from anything.
Yeah,
as far as I know.
It is. I was pretty devastated, if I'm honest, at 14 years old, sort of showing a bit of promise in the trials thing and then moving up into the middle of what I considered to the end of the earth sort of thing. But we did it. Fair play to Mum and Dad. We did a lot of traveling back and down 6 hours each way for events and things like that. So they did what they could to keep us involved. But there was a flirtation with motocross where I borrowed a little KX80 or something or other. It was one of the local club guys, and proceeded to crash that in no uncertain terms. Didn't know how to crash one of those, know how to crash a trials bike pretty well, but not a motocross bike. And that sort of woke me up to the fact that, this isn't really for me. So it was back to the trials full on.
Cool. And so you've got a very impressive CV. So I'll just paint a picture for the listeners, because you are quite accomplished. So you've been riding 33 years in an A-grade or expert level, which is the upper echelon of trials in Australia. And you're the 7 times WA state champion. So you must have, as you say, had a bit of success early on, and that's continued.
Yeah, I guess through that period, I went through juniors and then got onto a bigger bike, which was a Honda TLM50, which was a little two-stroke Honda trials bike, sort of around the mid-80s, about 85, 86, which Dad and a friend of his imported from the UK, from Jim Sanderford's at the time. And they were a great little bike, a little underpowered, but they were a great next step up from moving onto the obvious TY175 and whatever, which were the only things around at that point. So we had that, and then progressed on to, I guess, up into A grade reasonably quickly. By the time I was sort of 15, I was in A grade, which was the top level, obviously, before the trial one, trial two type thing nowadays. And just jumped up there. I didn't really do much in C grade and B grade, really. It just progressed quite quickly. I was quite lucky in that regard. So,
yeah. Now, for the listeners that maybe aren't familiar with Australian geography, the East Coast and the West Coast of Australia are about as far apart as the East Coast and West Coast of the USA. So there's a bit of distance between us. In fact, technically, I think I'm closer to New Zealand than I am to you right now.
Yeah, I reckon.
In the same country. But so just the reason I
frame it that way is because there's quite a bit of distance to get over to the East Coast. Did you guys ever come over for any nationals and do any road trips over here?
Yeah, definitely. Yep, we did what we could. We didn't come over every year, but certainly every couple of 3 years where possible. Big trip that was pretty memorable. Dad drove me and a friend over to the Aussie titles in 1988, which was in Broken Hill in New South Wales. And that was a bit of a mission in itself, but epic trip. I was in what they call the restricted license holders class up against a certain Kevin Zizinski, legend that he is as well. He was one of the gun guys back in those days. And so if I remember rightly, I think he won it. And then a fellow from WA, my friend who traveled with us, Chris Whitcomb, who's no longer with us, sadly, but he was second. I was third, I think, from memory. I can't quite remember. I think I was third, but and still got the best trophy I've ever got to this day. It was the coolest thing I've ever had, like a core sample out of the mining up there and everything. And it was the maddest trophy ever, but it was really cool. So that was, we did it across trips like that and then came across to the Barossa, to SA for a couple of nationals and Queensland. And so we did a few. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it really was like a whole family commitment, and you were showing a lot of promise and getting the results by the sounds of it. So one of the things we know is that you have moved to the UK about 2001. So take me through that sort of decision-making process and what you were doing in the lead up to that decision to go over to the UK, because you've obviously gone over and ridden extensively in the UK, but what was the time like back then for you in Australia?
Yeah, got into A grade about 89 and then was lucky enough in 1990 to win my first WA state championship against a good few guys who were a lot older than me, but still well on the money with their riding and everything else. So that was probably a big step for me. And then really the big learning curve and the big step next was that the guys on the East Coast were definitely better than us. And it was always that that competition level wasn't necessarily here in WA. A few of those guys dropped away after 1990. And I would go across to, I think, Inverell in New South Wales for the 92 Nationals, for example, and just basically got my backside handed to me, really, with the quality of riders. Kevin and those guys had really kicked on to another level in terms of riding, and it brings it home, as you mentioned, about the distance between here and there, and having that regular competition at an elite level. Really, you used to go across the East Coast and it was just so difficult. You were just a bit overawed, a bit nervous, all those things, and just pure quality riding. The guys are just, you know, they were awesome riders, as simple as that. And then so just was doing very well at WA level, winning sort of state championships and things through to the mid-90s, but not really progressing massively on the Aussie side of things. I'd had sort of sevenths and sixths in the open solo and things like that, but not really getting to really hang on to the Kevins and Robert Jones and the guys that were Colin and all these guys who were really getting amongst it and winning the championships, you know. So just kept riding at that. And then 1994, I went to the UK for a year as a standalone year. I just sort of wanted to get over there and with my British heritage and everything, I just wanted to experience everything over there, do the Scottish Six Days, some British championships, that sort of stuff, and just basically get amongst it. And yeah, unfortunately, wasn't a great year. I didn't have a lot of money to my name, so I bought a cheap Fantic 245 to do the year with over there. Managed to do my ACL at the Scottish, on ACL rather, at my knee on the last day of the Scottish while John Lampkin was watching me in a section, which was very embarrassing of all people. But and he was great. He encouraged me to actually get the job finished and get the trial finished. Otherwise, the way I was feeling, I just wanted to pull out and sit in a corner and cry somewhere. But yeah, so that was a tough year and came back at the end of 94 and then did some more 95 through to the end of that, the 90s, really just local stuff, Aussie titles, bits and pieces, but never really properly kicked on and broke into that sort of top five that I was hoping to on the East Coast. The guys were really solid and getting the, it was the same sort of guys, Lee Dreesen's guys like that. And then about 99, I went and did some Vic Championships rounds. I had a bit of sponsorship from Gas from, is it Andy Derwent, I think, who used to be the Gas importer at that point, the trials importer, and he was very kind to offer me some sponsorship through Gas. So he very kindly helped me out with a bike to ride over there. So I used to fly over on a Friday night, and then he would sort of put me up at his place and do that. So I did a few of the Vic Champs rounds to try and take me to that next level and try and catch up to the guys on the East Coast a bit. Dylan Reese was riding awesome, and Trev Campbell and those guys. And then 2000, I did a full season of the New South Wales Champs. So I managed to get some sponsorship together and flew across to New South Wales. Don Murray was supporting me as Sherco at that point and being really awesome about it. He used to pick me up at the crack of dawn on a Saturday morning. I'd get the Midnight Horror across on a Friday night, and he'd pick me up. We'd go and prep the bike, do some practice on Saturday, drive me to the event, and we'd do the trial, and then he'd drop me off at the airport on the way home, and then I'd fly back Sunday night and back to work Monday morning.
God, that is the red-eye flight. That must be tough.
it was a big weekend, but it's what you had to do. Like, it's those guys, there was no way I was going to improve with riding here. Neil Price hadn't come through quite at that point. He was just on the verge of breaking through in 2000 and getting to the level he's been at for a long time. But so it was what I had to do. And I was really determined to give my best shot to try and give it my best nudge with those guys. And that's what you did. I loved it. It was great. Awesome experience. But I think I was probably even at that point at what, 27, 28, probably not going to improve enough to really, they were seasoned campaigners, the guys at that point.
Yeah. So. I'd be interested in your thoughts on this actually, because the sentiment I'm hearing from you is that success breeds success, or riding with quality improves your quality. And if you're so isolated in WA and some of the more seasoned competition had dropped away and some of the newer competition hadn't come through, that would be quite a challenge. And you've gone to extreme lengths to ride together, but the takeaway really is by riding with people better than you or as good as you, it pushes your level. And I think that's probably some sentiments that applies whether you're at the top of our sport or just coming through at the bottom and beginning your trials journey.
Absolutely. I think it's got to be within you, something within you that wants to push yourself forward and really progress in a measured approach, I guess, to a degree. But I think it's really key that you keep pushing forward, maybe not jumping ahead in classes too quickly and getting too far ahead of yourself. But when you get to that sort of level, the only way is to, you've got to ride against those guys and become accustomed to being amongst them and challenging yourself, and be expected that you're going to have some steep learning curves along the way. But it's just what I had to do. And I was at the time of life there with, you know, I was still loving the sport, but it wasn't really progressing as I was hoping. And to be honest with you, David, I probably wasn't showing the commitment at my end here. I was fortunate that I was winning state championships fairly easily, which didn't, I hope that didn't sound arrogant, but at that point through the mid 90s, sort of to a degree. And it was just, I probably wasn't showing the commitment from the physical aspect, training and all that sort of thing. And then it was showing up in spades when I'd go over the East Coast and the guys were just basically flogging me, really. And so,
yeah, okay. So you land in Bury in Manchester.
Yes.
Or just north of Manchester, the old family stomping ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this frantic, but you're saying that you started out there, it didn't go so well. You'd actually hurt your knee in the Scottish 6-day you rode that year.
Yeah, and that was 1994. So I did a standalone year in 1994, and that's when I hurt my knee. So I got that fixed struggled through 95 with wearing knee braces and all sorts, and it got really bad. So it was just affecting everything. I was just favouring the other side of my riding and my leg. And so I got that fixed. I had an ACL reconstruction. And then in 98, actually, which I'd failed to mention, we had a massive team of that we put together all over a bottle of red wine one Sunday afternoon with Paul Church, who you mentioned kindly put my name forward for this. So we got together with this idea about getting a team together going to do the Scottish in 1998. And I'd had a taste of it, obviously, already in 94 and was dead keen to have another crack and do it properly this time with a proper bike and everything else. We got a team together of three riders, myself, Tony Church, Paul's son, and my brother, Scott Morris. And we got together and went across the big team. We had a heap of supporters from WA and we just had a massive group of us. And it was just the most fantastic event, really. We all got together and booked out a load of accommodation and the guys chased us around the trial all week and everything else. We hired bikes from John Lampkin, Beta Technos. So we did that. And that was my second time in the Scottish. It was a bit of a disastrous week from a results point of view. We had a problem with the chain wrapping up in the front sprockets a few times. And I guess there is a bit of a tale there actually with that, if you've got the time to hear it.
But we've always got time.
So basically, one of these particular days, I managed to wrap the chain up in the front sprockets. And it was on the other side of the ferry crossing. So basically you had to get it was either push it along and to then get it to the ferry and then get across the ferry, which was relatively easy, and then push it up the other side. And then it was a long push and you weren't supposed to get any help, obviously putting bikes and vans and things. So you hear all these rumors that people were doing these sorts of things, but you didn't. All of a sudden I needed to be one of those rumors. I didn't. So we managed to get the, and it just wouldn't run. So what had happened was, long story, the chain had wrapped up in the front. So we took the flywheel covers off, trying to get it out.
Yes.
Eventually got the chain out, but a very kind spectator who was trying to, had a screwdriver on him and put the screwdriver through the flywheel and into the stator wires accidentally, trying to free up the front sprocket to get the chain out of the front sprocket, and managed to damage all the stator wires. So it went from getting the chain out, thinking, hey, we're back on board and all good to go. And then all of a sudden,
no
and
electric.
It wouldn't start. And we were thinking, what's going on here? And then realized what had happened. It was like, oh my God, this curtains. So managed to get back down to the road, side of the road, and very subtly put it into the back of a kind supporters van and whizzed past all these people. Time was running out, obviously. You only get an hour or so before you time out for the event. I was a bit ahead of time that day, fortunately. Got to just before, about 200 or 300 metres before the ferry. And, of course, you don't want the officials seeing you do things like that. Back
what
in
are
the
you
day.
Doing? Yep.
So we pulled the bike out of the van and then I pushed it along to the ferry and clocked out for the ferry and everything and got onto the ferry, got across the other side, and then eventually did the same thing on the other side, got back to the part for May. And at that point, a certain Dougie Lampkin was a factory, current world champion factory beta rider.
Yeah.
Wasn't allowed to ride the event for concentrating. He didn't want to ride the event. He was concentrating on the world championship but was hanging around the pits and everything. So we came rushing back in and be flapping and carrying on and, well, we need to sort this thing out. Oh my God. And all this sort of thing. And next minute, obviously, that 1998 model was literally built from the ground up, and Dougie had a huge part to play in the R&D and that bike.
Yep.
So he knew the thing inside out. He knew every nut, bolt, wire, everything. So him and his dad, the late Martin, who's a legend as well and super helpful guy, basically set about this bike with me and ripped the thing apart, got all the wiring together, everything else, got it fixed, got it. So it was basically in a sort of semi-put-together back state in half the time it would have taken me to do it. And then we pushed it like Billy-O to the sign-in for the pits for the night and got it in there with a couple of minutes to spare. So I didn't time out of the whole event and then literally finished off putting it back together the next day. But so I had the current world champion working like, and he was so cool. Like he got stuck in and just no airs and graces. The Lampkins, as you've interviewed, they're proper people. You
salt
know?
Of the earth sort of fellas.
They are.
Yep.
So just didn't, there's no airs. You know, he's fancy jackets on all the factory clothing and all again, just got stuck in, and his dad was issuing instructions, and it was super cool. So.
Okay. So if you're going to break down at the Scottish 6 Day, look for the current world champion.
That's right.
In Parc Fermé. Right. Got it.
Yes.
Pro tip.
And I will probably recount that tale until I'm very old and forget it, because it was such a massive, cool moment for me, being a little Aussie from over here and riding at the biggest event in world trials and having someone like that working on your bike. It was pretty awesome.
Well, I've spoken to a number of people that have done the Scottish 6 Day. I've spoken to a number of people that sort of work in the administrative side of the Scottish 6 Day. And the sentiments I get is that they just want everyone, especially someone that's like you or I that has come from so far away, to just have a good time. And just to, and that permeates through fellow competitors as well, because it's all about, there's some hard-earned money to get across and do these events and the bucket list kind of things. So, everyone just wants you to walk away happy.
Yeah, look, I can't even say to you or overstate just how awesome that event is on so many levels. From a camaraderie perspective, the challenge of the event, the friendly people, the officials, everyone that comes together, it literally is the mecca of trials in that respect. And I just listened to Amos today on the previous one, and the pedestal that he put the Scottish 6 Days victory that he had up on that level, for someone of his standing to say that it doesn't matter if you're Joe Average, or the current one of the world contenders like him, the status that he puts on the Scottish like that is such an incredibly fantastic event. And the achievement in finishing it, I forget about results. You get good results, that's even better. But just to finish it is huge, no matter what level you're at.
Yeah, okay.
It is an experience. Anyone who's interested in our sport that wants to see the pinnacle of our sport needs to go to the Scottish when it's back on, hopefully next year.
Hopefully next year. Fingers crossed. Fingers and toes and legs and everything. So you went over with a bit of a one-year mission. It was you and a group of people that went over in sort of 98.
Yep.
But then you went back to the UK permanently, or not permanently, but you went back to the UK in 2001 for then about a 10-year stint.
Yes.
So had you tried your hand at the Scott trial beforehand at any of these trials? Because I know you've done 3 Scots, you said, as well.
Yeah, no, I didn't do the Scott trial in 94. I can't remember why I didn't do that. It would have definitely been probably on my radar. It might have been because I was struggling with my knee. I'd injured my knee at that point.
Yeah, okay.
The riding side of thing had petered out a little bit. I was struggling big style with that and what have you. But 98 was a bit of a flying visit. We were there for sort of 3 weeks or so and flew out again. But yeah, at the end of 2000, reached a crossroads really with the Aussie riding side of things. I'd always had this itch I wanted to scratch about going and doing some riding in the UK with my family history. And I knew it was the pinnacle of the sport for me anyway, with the conditions and the famous events and the Scottish, all the British nationals.
Yeah.
And I just wanted a piece of that really. So, I was single at the time and carefree and easy and had some money in the bank, and I could have done the boring thing and bought a house and settled down here and everything else. But then I thought, nah, stuff it. I'll just burn all the money. And but again, Don Murray was very kind. He organised me a new Sherco through Malcolm Rathmull, and they were obviously the importers over there, and just took off, and that was it. And 2001 was a bit of a disaster because we arrived literally, the first day. So I sat on my cousin's sofa when I arrived having a cup of tea and looked at the telly on the news, and she said, oh, that doesn't sound too good. And it was in a place called Settle in Yorkshire, and the first case of foot and mouth had just kicked off.
Yeah,
and I didn't know what that even meant at all. And then as it progressed and got worse and worse, I had a brand new bike sitting at Rathmull's. And then my dad rang me up after about a week or so, I think, and said, I think you're in a bit of strife here with the riding side of things. And I said, oh, what do you mean? And he said, and Dad was in the UK in the late 60s when the last major outbreak of that happened, and it was a disaster. They lost a whole heap of time riding. So I ended up losing, I reckon, till the back end of summer, probably August, September, before we were allowed to start riding again. So I lost, I had a brand new bike sitting there in stereo. I rang Malcolm up and said, can I come and get the bike? I'm all excited. And he said, well, you can come and get it. You can't ride it anywhere. Yeah. So literally just, it was all set to go. So really pretty much lost the first year of riding, which was pretty galling, really.
Yeah.
All set up to do it. So then by that stage, I'd met my now wife, and we'd met and were getting on quite famously. So I sort of said, oh, I'll hang around for 2002. And I was always planning to stay for, you know, a long time, or a longer time, not just a quick fleeting 12 months and out again thing. And then it went on from 2002 and, just got stuck into the British Championships, did Scottish, Scott Trial, I think I did that year, and that was purgatory. Amazing and absolutely unreal, like in a sort of torture type way.
Explain, why is it torture? Is it give someone that's never done a Scott Trial an appreciation of why you say it's torture?
Just because it's just so relentless. It's 80 sections, 80 miles from memory. And it literally is, when you're talking about a bike, as we all know, we haven't got seats or anything. So you're standing up on a bike for probably 7 or 8 hours for the guys that are at the back of the field, maybe 5 or 6 for the quick guys. But, and you literally, and the sections are tough. The sections are not, I think people sometimes have this sort of theory that the sections are pretty steady sort of thing, but some of them are really tough. And when you're absolutely exhausted, and you get to halfway through the day and you think, blimey, I've only done sort of 35 mile or something or other, and you've got some big moor crossings. If there's heavy rain and conditions, it's just relentless. And you literally are, it's just a massive challenge on a trials bike.
So how do you feel at the end of a Scott Trial versus the end of a first day of a Scottish 6 day? Is it similar, or is it harder than your first day of your Scott? Because I guess you have to pace. With a Scottish 6 day, you have to pace it to some extent, because you've got to back it up for another 5 days. But whereas I guess the Scott, you go all out.
Yeah, the Scott, you've just got to go for it. You do have to pace yourself to a degree, but you sort of make a conscious decision depending on, obviously, if you're down the field a little bit, you just make a decision you want to finish within time, and you don't want to get timed out after putting all that effort in and then out of time after the last time guy or finisher. But the Scottish, you definitely, it's a bit steadier. You are tired. At the end of each day, you're definitely tired for sure. The moor crossings and the not so much the sections, it's actually getting between the sections sometimes. In the Scottish, that can be a bit hectic if it's a really wet event, the moor crossings and things, and some of the you know, you're in and out of ditches and like 10, 15 mile across the side of a hill, which is just so sodden in water that it's just, there's no base to it at all, for example. So those sorts of things really take it out on the club and any of us, really. The Scott Trial is just relentless. It is just, you do not, it's, I remember the first time I finished it, we went for a pub tea that night and I literally had a steak in front of me and I was moving my whole body to try and cut the steak because I couldn't move my arms to actually cut the bloody thing. So it was just laughable, really. It was, but incredibly satisfying to finish.
Yeah. So. Oh, well done. And so we briefly interrupt this conversation to remind you that this podcast is sponsored by GasGas. While stocks last, GasGas are offering a $2,500 factory rebate on the 2020 TXT 250 and 300 bikes. Locally here in Australia, as well as $1,500 rebates on the 2021 models. Get in quick because these deals are only available while stocks last. Now back to our conversation.
Your time over there, it sounded like it, you knew it wasn't going to be a fleeting visit, but equally you didn't know it was going to be a decade either. So what else did you manage to get up to whilst you're in that time in the UK? Because in preparation for this, we've discussed with a few things that you've done the British, you've done some British championships, but you also even worked in the industry.
Yes. Yep. So I actually originally, the first year I was over there in 2001 and 2002, didn't actually work in the bike industry or anything. I hadn't worked in the bike industry prior to my sort of roles now. I'd been in the car industry in WA before I'd left here. I was working for Toyota and Toyota dealerships and things. And then I went over there, was just working as a labourer, just earning some extra dollars and bits and pieces with all the issues going on over there, and then had enough of that. So I got back into the car industry. but really just riding anything and anything I could get into, really. The British Nationals were a massive favourite of mine.
You know, the big one. Road Nationals?
Yeah, they're awesome. Like, they're literally, you set off from the top of a hill, you've got 30, 40 miles on your trials bike riding around the most beautiful countryside. I take in 30, 40 sections in a day, and you're just on your trials bike for 7 hours, 6, 7 hours with fuel stops here and there, but just a fantastic day out on your bike, value for money, and just the countryside and everything about it. They're just awesome. So they were my favourites. And then, yeah, I didn't do British Championships for much more. About 2005 or so, I think I stopped doing those. I'd lost a little bit of interest and focused more on the big nationals and those sorts of things.
And then you did another couple of Scots. But am I correct in saying you've got a special first class award from one of your 9 Scottish 6-day attempts?
I am, yeah. My last one in 2008. I was working and riding at Montesa 4RT for Caroline Sanderford, who was the Montesa importer. And they very kindly, as part of my job, supplied me a bike and looked after me very well for the whole week. And yeah, that week was slightly different from other times when I had my wife with me, or my girlfriend at the time, Anna. And I always felt there was a bit of pressure when she was there, because we were doing our own thing, and she was very kindly driving around the moors in our little van, chasing around me. And I always felt a bit under pressure and stressed about her being, you know, make sure she was okay and everything else.
Yeah.
So it sort of did take your concentration away. But that particular year in 08, I tried and fell short a few times. I think the year before, maybe, I'd missed out. I was 51st, and it was the top 50 that got the special first. So I was completely gutted about. And then that year, it was a very dry event relatively, and it just all came together that year. The bike was fantastic and just had a good week, a really solid week. And then I nearly blew it on the sixth day. I was, from memory, I think I was in 30-something position overall, and then literally had a bad Saturday and was totally distraught. And I can vividly remember I literally didn't want to stay for the presentation. I was totally convinced that I'd blown the top 50.
Yeah.
And missed out my chance again. Jumped in the van, helped tidy up, pack up with boss and all the gear, and then jumped in the van, said, right, we're coming home, that's it, and proceeded to set off on the 6-hour drive back down to Manchester.
Yep.
And then my wife rang me halfway back and said, oh, you're not staying up there. You know, and she said, the results have just come out and you've finished 42nd, I think it was, or 43rd or something like that. So I was now I feel like a bit of an idiot. So it was a bit silly getting carried away, but I was so upset that I'd had such a good week and I thought I'd blown it. But it was, overall, it was a fantastic week. And that was the one thing, David, to be honest, that I wanted to get in my career more than anything else. I wanted to get that special first, and something that I've thought about since I was a kid.
Yeah, okay.
And it felt a bit different a little bit for the Scottish after that. Like, I could have ridden it again. I didn't come back to Australia till 2011, but
yeah,
I could have ridden again in 9 and 10 and what have you before we left, and even 2011, but it slightly changed for me that I'd got what I achieved in a funny way, and just felt like I'd really tick that box and put a lot of effort in that year, had every great support and backup from the Sanderfords and everything. And it just all felt like it just worked.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just felt, and there was a period there probably where riding wasn't as crucial. We were talking about coming back to live in Australia at that point and so on. So I was still riding and enjoying myself. But
so you're more road nationals and club trials rather than
that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, really cool. Like I think the older I got, you know, into my mid-30s by that point, and I just loved that big ride around with your friends, and I got to know a good crew of people over there and some great people that, you know, I'm still friends with to this day. And and just a big ride around on your trials bike. What more could you want, really? You know?
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds like a great time. And the decision to come back to Australia, I mean, was it easy to leave the UK, because you've spent a decade of your life at that point there? Was it, or you were you ready to come back?
I love the place and I still love the place now, but their weather sucks.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And it hadn't bothered me for 8 years or so, 8 or 9 years. And then the last 2 winters before I left, or we left, the winters were just brutal from November through to March or April. It was just, you were frozen in. It was heaps of snow, heaps of ice.
Yeah.
And I'm an outdoor sort of guy, and just literally you'd be going home, going to work in the dark, coming home. And we had a little 2-up, 2-down type house. So we didn't go much at night, and we're just sitting in front of the telly, and I'm just like, this is driving me insane.
Especially when Perth is your benchmark. I was coming from Melbourne. Right. So
Yeah, you would have been same, really. No, it's not that bad, is it? And then we came back from my brother's wedding in 2010, and the day before we were due to fly back to the UK, I just basically went down to the beach with my wife and just said, I think that's it. I want to come back here and make a life here again. And it had always been that live here, live there thing for both of us. Her family, obviously, she's got to give up a lot to come to Australia, and she had a great career going herself and all that. So it was a big ask, but we said, no, stuff it, we'll give it a go. And I mean, I was coming home in effect to a degree, but the place had changed a lot.
I know you explained your logic around the fact that, yeah, the time had come, but was there a little part of you that's going, I'm going to miss being an hour's drive from a trial every weekend?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you literally could ride as much as you wanted up there. And there was midweek trials, which were really cool on a summer's evening, Wednesday night trial. I'd zoom away from Apico at 5 o'clock or whatever. And because it didn't go dark until 9:30, 10 o'clock, you could literally get a 3 or 4 hour trial. And then they go to the pub and have a beer and
yeah.
What do they call it? Pie and peas and a beer after an event. It was just unreal. It was so good. So you do miss all that. And I've met some great people. Along the way in the local club, Rochdale Club. They were just such awesome and welcoming people that had helped me along when I was turning up at events in the early days and didn't have a clue, didn't know anyone, didn't have any contacts. I'd sit there in a little van and do my thing, and people were always so friendly and welcoming, and you know, so great memories. Yeah,
that is good. So you mentioned Apico. So they're a motorcycle accessories and trials accessories provider. So you managed to work your way into a career in motorcycling at that point?
Yeah, so 2003, 2004, I started working for a gentleman called David Dearden, who ran a big motorcycle shop in the Northwest, Robinson's Motorcycles, and worked for him in parts and ran the parts department there for him. That was sort of where I got to meet a lot more industry people and my first experience in the bike side of things and my first experience with KTM as a brand as well,
which we'll
probably come to in a bit. And then went from him after 4 or 5 years there, went to work for the Sandifords as the Montesa importers for a while, Montesa and Honda. And then, yeah, left there after a year or so and went across to Apico as sales manager for Vesti and Diane at Apico, which are a massive wholesale trials and motocross wholesaler. They've got about 700 dealers, I think, UK-wide, and a huge supplier of all that stuff. And it was fantastic working for Vesti as well. I mean, obviously a living legend in the trials world in his own right, and a very driven man with business as well, very successful businessman too. And, yeah, him and Diane were good to me, and I started up there and was there until I left. Come home in 2011.
So you landed back in Australia, and how did you end up working for KTM?
Yeah, so that was a strange one in itself, really. Long story, which I'll try and cut short. But Vesti, so my boss at the time, my soon-to-be boss, Jeff Leask, was obviously, you probably know, a professional motocross rider, achieved amazing things in Europe. He was sponsored by Vesti when he used to do Apico riding clothing, which became an absolute phenomenon, the Apico riding clothing back in the day. So when Jeff went to Europe, he sponsored him in all the riding gear. Jeff went to live with them for a period of time. Long story short, they thought the world of Jeff and he'd really grown well with them and live with them and et cetera, et cetera. So long story short, I'd met Jeff a couple of times in the early days, back in the 90s. He came and presented awards at state championship trials and things. So I'd met briefly with him and knew him to a degree. So I knew that KTM was based in Perth at that time. So I literally, as I was new, I was coming home, sent an email to Jeff saying, oh, look, I worked with KTM for 5 years at dealership level in the UK, love parts, accessories, like what KTM's about. If there's anything going on, it'd be great if you can let me know. And then literally the next day he called me up and said, mate, your timing's unreal. We've been looking for someone to take hold of the accessory side of the business and so on. So we had a bit of a chat and effectively sorted out a job role within 20 minutes before it even landed back in the country, which was awesome.
Holy.
So, yeah, it was funny the way it turned out. Sometimes things like that just work out, and it's so often, isn't it? It's who you know, not necessarily what you know, that can help you along.
Absolutely.
And Jeff was an amazing boss, absolutely fantastic boss for nearly 10 years for me, and great supporter. And, yeah, I've always loved and enjoyed the KTM product, and then obviously later times with Husaberg, Husqvarna, and obviously GasGas further down the track. So it's always been a very enjoyable brand to work for, and they've always had something new and exciting coming along the way. So got stuck in, and I can't believe it's 10 years this year with the company. So it seems 10 minutes sometimes, but it's crazy.
And I can't ignore the fact that this isn't actually our first conversation. We've been speaking in the lead up to this because GasGas are a sponsor of the podcast, and it all sort of was coordinated through yourself. So firstly, a big thank you to yourself and the GasGas family and KTM group, because it's certainly helps this podcast reach the audience it does. So yes, big thank you for that. But your role as well is including now the trials brands with GasGas. Is that correct?
Yeah, so it all was a bit of a whirlwind, really, because the KTM group acquired GasGas as a brand back at the end of 2019, and that all happened in sort of 5 minutes flat. I think GasGas or the Toro group were in a bit of strife and needed sort of moving on. So they reached agreement pretty quickly. And then effectively, before I knew it, it was sort of the end of summer, and we had some bikes coming over, and we were establishing the brand and a dealer network and things. And No one really within our company knew anything about trials, obviously. So everyone's looking at me going, you're the guy. Yep. You need to be there. So I sort of by stealth, I became effectively what my boss refers to as DOT, Director of Trials, which isn't a proper title. It's just something he does to take the mick out of me. But so I've sort of, along with the guys who I knew, most of the guys anyway, the dealers that we've set up, the trial specific dealers, and they're all, you know, really great people and proper enthusiasts of the sport fundamentally, which is massive really in our sport, I think, more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, brand loyalties aside and everything else, I'm all about the sport fundamentally, and the brands come a second place for me all the time. It's all about growing the sport and telling people how good our sport is, really. So so then all of a sudden, before I knew it, I had a gas turn up at home, and they said, here's your bike to ride. And I, funnily enough, I just spent all summer tarting up 4RT that I'd had, which was still at that time was my favorite ever bike that I'd had. And I managed to acquire one and was spent all summer minting it up and everything else. And it was all good to go, new tires, new everything. And then it was like, no, here's a gas to ride. So, which was a bit of a shock to the system, because I, funnily enough, in the UK, I'd ridden a few different brands, but gas really hadn't touched with them much in that period. But yeah, it all came about. And obviously, I'm very grateful that I'm allowed the use of a bike as part of my job. And, and I've helped to set the network up. And it's been a big adjustment for the dealers in this country too, and they've had a big adjustment from the previous importer through Paul, who did an amazing job for a long time.
Yep.
And obviously Paul, probably the biggest adjustment of all for Paul, really, going from the importer to being a dealer, but he's been really fantastic with everything. And so it's just developing that and bringing it along, really.
So that's Paul Arnott, for the listeners.
Paul Arnott.
From the Hell Team, who's the other sponsor of our podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, so would we still be seeing Grant Morris at the, you know, club trials? It sounds like if you've got a bike, you may as well be riding it.
Yeah, I am. The trials, I love my sport, always will love trials, and I'll always have a trials bike. I think I ride occasionally nowadays. I think I've only ridden twice this year for various different reasons. I'm big into my mountain biking. I really enjoy that a bit now.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that stuff. And I've done the odd race here and there,
but
nothing super serious about competitive side of things. I just love the challenge of it. It seems to work pretty well alongside the trials thing, and the skills that you need really translate pretty well across to that. And it's just something that I've got into. I've done it for a long time, but not as keen as I have been in recent years. But I'm lucky, really, David. I've got the bike there to use. Company are really great. They support me with the bits I need to go riding, and I still love it. I'm marking out a trial, a club championship event in a few weeks' time, and I'll be riding that and doing most of the club championship event. Just love riding. I try not to take it as seriously as I used to, because I still get pretty cross at myself, as anyone who knows me and has watched me ride through a section when I'm not happy with my ride will laugh, because they'll know how much I yell and scream and abuse myself, and when I'm not riding to what I consider to be my standard. So
Grumpy Grant.
Very much. Yeah. The WA guys will be laughing themselves listening to this. So
I've been accused of something similar, face like thunder, when I'm not riding to my potential. I share your, I'm very sympathetic with that.
I tend to do it more verbally. I just yell and scream and carry like a pork chop. It's a trait that I've well and truly inherited from my father, who used to do the same thing. And every, the older guys, Neil's dad, Simon, and they all think it's hilarious, because they knew dad when he rode as well. So they can see father to son thing.
So is there any scoops that you can share with us around developments on gas and the new models?
Oh, nothing I can really say right now. There is, look, what I can say is there is some very exciting news coming up a little bit along the way.
Teaser.
I can tell you one thing I would definitely share is that the KTM group, obviously as a brand or as a group, do not like to finish second, and they do not mess around. I've said that in those exact words to many people. Obviously, we get asked about what might be down the track, etc. I can tell you they've got what I feel are two fantastic guys in terms of any R&D development that needs to happen and will be happening and is happening on future bikes and things like that. So there is, I think Albert's one of the scoops. If I hope they can keep him on board for a long time, because I think he's a fantastic guy to have around.
When
as
we
a
interviewed
team manager
him
and,
for the podcast, I put that question to him, and he was one of the things that impressed him was how genuine and serious the KTM group were at maintaining the roots of the gas origin and the trials origin, and also the professionalism and the fortitude they took towards the competitive side. So
definitely
he was extolling the virtues of the factory approach back when I interviewed him, and that was, you know, months ago now, and I imagine it's only stronger since.
They're winners, basically, to be honest, David. It doesn't matter if you're riding at enduro, motocross, MotoGP, they want to win everything they enter in. So I can tell you now they won't stop until they get the results they want to get in Trial GP. Awesome. The story I had heard, and I have to assume that's true, is that Hubert Trunkenpoltz, who's the T in KTM, was a massive trials person as well. And it was a super keen to get a trials brand on board within the group. And obviously this opportunity came up. So it was something that they hadn't got. They'd pretty much got every other segment within motorcycling covered, and they hadn't got a trials bike within the stable, so that was pretty exciting if that is the case. There is some exciting stuff coming along, and they will keep at it until they get the results they want to get. There is no doubt about that. They're on a mission.
I can't end a podcast without going through some standard questions. I might mix it up actually. So what's one thing you wish you would have known before you started riding trials?
At the very beginning?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question. That's a very good question. I don't know. What would I have known? What would I want? Yeah. Just, I don't know about what I would have wanted to know, but just how much fun it is and how just the memories you have as a family going to all the events, the good times, the camaraderie with all the, just everyone, really. I guess it's probably not so much what I would want to know ahead of that, but it's just the good memories, I guess, more than anything.
So what you're kind of saying is it's a no regret bet. If you're going to decide whether you get into it or not, just get into it because the memories, the experience, the camaraderie, all that you reflect on all these years later.
Yeah, immerse yourself into it. Generally, they're a fantastic bunch of people. It doesn't matter if you're from this side of Australia, your side, everywhere you go.
Yeah,
I think trials people are a special breed that really are fantastically welcoming. And the sport it's just like a drug. I think the guys that were on recently had said that it literally is like a drug that you can't get out of your system. So to my wife's disgust sometimes, she's not going to ride this year, are you? I said, of course I am. It's just what I'm going to do. She doesn't like that saying when I just say, it's just what I do. She goes a bit mad, but anyway.
What has been your biggest challenge and what did you learn from it?
In the sport?
Yeah.
Yeah. My biggest challenge on a motorcycle is definitely the Scott trial. That taught me perseverance, patience, two attributes that I think are absolutely crucial in our sport, whether you're learning. You see a lot of people starting out in our sport that want to be really good really quickly and expect to be really good, and really, especially if they've come from another motorcycle discipline. I think they have an expectation that they're going to get really good really quick. And that's not doing them, but you've got to have that patience and perseverance to stick at it. And you'll have bad days and you'll feel like a bit of an umpty at times and you might have a few crashes, but stick at it and be patient and you'll get the rewards in the end. But the Scott trial was probably one of those that really taught me that, and the Scottish as well. And there's no doubt about it. Those events they're all about that, the challenge of it and the achievement when you get through it is epic.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, what would be some advice you'd give someone who was thinking of starting trials?
Enjoy it, absolutely, without question. You must just keep a smile on your face. Don't beat yourself up if you don't feel that you're achieving what you may have thought you were going to achieve in no time at all. Embrace everything that the sport's about and fundamentally just enjoy it. Be patient. It'll come to you. You've just got to stick with it, and really the sport has so much to offer and it will give you skills. I think you've only got to look at, across all disciplines of world motorcycling, the number of people that have got a trials background that have gone on to get world championships in other disciplines, whether it be enduro, motocross, or even road racing and things. Those skills, clutch, balance, throttle control, will translate into any sport across the way. And it's just such a skillful sport to learn that it just offers so much and so much enjoyment and pleasure, and let alone the buzz of when you do well in results or whatever you do at club level or otherwise, it just gives you so much, I think.
And what's next for you? I mean, any international trips on the horizon, or are those days, do you think, behind you?
I would love, I have the little itch gnawing away again about doing another Scottish, just one more perhaps, and just going for fun this time. And hopefully I'd like to drag my brother across. As I say, way back in 98, we did it together and he still rides now. He still rides occasionally as well. And we have a great time with a ride together. I'd still probably like to do that. I wouldn't go and do like a full season or anything again. I think I'm moved beyond that. I'm 48 now, obviously, and getting on a bit, as they say, to do things like that. But and probably even just consider down the track, like one-off events like the you know, things like the French Four Day that they have every year. Yep. I didn't really touch on that earlier on, but things like that are just fantastic social occasions. And
did you get over there when you were in Europe to do the French Four Day?
I did, yeah. Just the once, actually, in 2004, I think it was.
Oh,
and
wow.
Just went over with a bunch of Northwest riding Rochdale Club members.
Yep.
And honestly, that was probably one of the best. It'd be right up there in the top five experiences of my life for trials. It was just so good. Like, beautiful warm weather, riding around the French hillsides, you know, little campsite, fresh bakery chucked into your tent every morning from the local patisserie, and a jump on your trials bike. Oh, another day on the bike. How joyful. It was just, it was gold. It was absolute gold. So that was a highlight of, you know, things like that. Just that's that welcoming thing. It doesn't matter if you're in France or the UK or anywhere. It's just everyone's so welcoming and the sport's awesome.
Fantastic. On that note, Grant Morris, thank you so much for being on the Trials Australia podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate your the opportunity. And yeah, thanks for having me on. It's awesome.
No worries. Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed this Trials Australia podcast. Remember, get in touch with us with any tips, suggestions, or recommended guests via email at podcast@trials.com.au. That's all for now.